Welcome to the Frontline Herbalism Podcast with your host Nicole Rose from the Solidarity Apothecary. This is your place for all things plants and liberation. Let's get started. Hello, welcome back to the Frontline Herbalism Podcast. How are you doing? I feel like I've ghosted you. I'm sorry. I had a little bit of a podcast break after the course launch for the Herbalism PTSD and Traumatic Stress course because, you know, it's just like such a huge amount of effort to do all the promotion and social media and, you know, troubleshooting if someone's got an access issue and stuff like this. So as in, you know, like a login user thing. But yeah, I'm super, super grateful for everyone who joined the course. Amazing to have a bunch of people inside it, already getting emails from people saying how helpful it's being. So that's really awesome. Yeah, been a busy bee. I'm just kind of like back to back with the clients, which is, you know, which is great. I've got, yeah, I've recently redesigned my clinic website and I'm going to do like a little announcement about that soon, but yeah, I'm trying to get a little bit better at doing kind of like, kind of more focused, like paid work with clients and more clearer boundaries around like unpaid work, especially as a single mum with a toddler on one little income. So I've kind of created like a limited company, check me out, as like a separate thing. And yeah, it'll just be like an easier way of, you know, like if we get donations for things like the Black Flag Herbal Clinic, the free clinic, then I can stick a sticker on them and I can know that that's for like solidarity things. And if I have paying clients, then I can buy medicine or make medicine for that. So yeah, it just hopefully will be a bit kind of cleaner. And I've just been upgrading all my systems, making a really nice little kind of welcome pack for new clients in terms of all the things like how to request refills, how to communicate with me, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I'm going to talk about all of that stuff soon. But I do have a little bit of space, miraculously, for new people. So if you were looking for like one-to-one herbal support, then please reach out to me. Like I said, I'm going to record a separate thing all about it. But basically, it's like a sliding scale. There's monthly payment plans. And I support people over 5 months in a super comprehensive way, looking at like really clear kind of health goals together. And yeah, it's awesome. It's like pretty much one of my favorite parts of being a herbalist. So, because you get to see the herbs doing their magic, if that makes sense. Okay. So, I've also been a busy bee. I taught a 3-day practical medicine making course, which, as always, was fucking dreamy. Beautiful group of humans, like just amazing having people from all over the world there. The weather was awesome. We always have awesome weather for the courses. I've just jinxed it now because I've got another one coming up really soon. So I'm probably going to make it rain now. But had a really wonderful 3-day course. It's so much work like beforehand in terms of like prepping things, ordering things. We made loads of medicine for the clinic in Calais. So yeah, lots of logistical thinking in there. But it was really, really wonderful. Like I've forgotten that kind of magic of introducing people to a herb like in real life if they've only just read about it in a book. So yeah, it was really, really special. And then I also had a few days off this weekend. I went down to see my ex's mum with Lee. He got to see his whole other side of the family and like play with his cousins. And like, yeah, it was super, super nice. We actually ended up going to the kind of beach where I spread my friend Taylor's ashes in the sea. So yeah, that was really special, taking my little one there and seeing him throw stones in the water. And knowing that just a few years ago, like life was pretty fucking joyless, not gonna lie. There was a lot of fucking grief and pain and rage. And I cannot believe what an amazing thing having a baby is. No one tells you how wonderful it is. So yeah, I'm very, very grateful. But it was a really nice few days. It was like really difficult not working. Like I was just watching trash in the evening and stuff and like trying not to think about the Solidarity Apothecary. And it was, yeah, I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, why is this so difficult? But I think it's just like single mum hustle, you know? And I'm really passionate about what I do, as you can probably tell. So I love thinking about things. How can I improve things? Systems, trying to not get shiny object syndrome with like the new projects and stuff. But anyway, I am back. And yeah, I'm going to be back with some podcasts. So I have been in contact with several people about interviews. I'm just sort of waiting for people to kind of like book themselves into my calendar to make that happen. And in the meantime, until those interviews are done and edited and things, I'm going to be doing some kind of more like solo recorded episodes. So I'm going to be talking about my sort of clinical practice and like the benefits of working with a herbalist versus kind of DIY health support and why it's not a binary. And I'm worried about promising this, but I'm hoping I'm going to do a mini series all about medicine making, because I feel like it's the fucking time now. Like all the herbs are out. I'm in between the two practical medicine making courses that I teach. And yeah, I just like love talking about it. So watch your space for that. But for today, I'm going to share like a repost of an interview I did. So I was interviewed on a show called Planting Medicine, which used to be called The Herbal Highway. Maybe people have heard of it. It's based in the so-called US, and it's like hosted and produced by Emiliano and Renee. I haven't met Renee yet, but yeah, it was really lovely to be interviewed. And yeah, they've been reposting the interview in like kind of a edited version with like spreading it across a few episodes, and they've framed it as like herbalism against fascism. And we talk about all the Solidarity Apothecary things. We talk about how we can kind of like amplify and build that kind of herbal solidarity infrastructure. Like, how do we support people who are incarcerated? How do we support families who are being like ripped apart by fucking ICE and the prison system? We talk about practical herbs to support the nervous system. Like, they asked me about like the clinic in Calais, so we talked about that. Yeah, we even had a bit of an origin story around like anarchism and like developing my politics around this stuff. So anyway, it was like a fucking honor to be interviewed. Please check out the show called Planting Medicine. I'll put a link in the show notes. They're doing like a big fundraiser at the moment and giving away my book and other things. So yeah, please support them, follow them on the old Instagram and all of that stuff. But yeah, thanks for listening, and I will be back really, really soon. Okay, take care. Bye.
Nicole, welcome to Planting Medicine. I'm so happy to have you here today. You know, at Planting Medicine, we've been big fans of your work for a long time and just your analysis of the place of herbs in the world to support folks politically in so many different ways. But for our listeners who don't know about your projects, can you tell us about yourself, your work?
Sure. Well, thanks again for the invitation. Long-term listener, and respect your show a lot and everything you're doing. But yeah, I'm Nicole. I live in the southwest of England. And yeah, I run a project called the Solidarity Apothecary. And the kind of, yeah, its role in the world, I guess, is supporting people experiencing state violence with herbal medicine. And I know we're going to get into all the things in a bit more detail, but just like the overview is, I was in prison when I was like much, much younger. And while I was in prison, I connected with plants, and then many years later wrote a book called The Prisoner's Herbal, which is now distributed to people in prison for free, like all over the world, like a bunch of translated editions. And yeah, that kind of like led to lots of other organizing. So organizing support for people experiencing repression through one-to-one support and care packages. I have two clinics, like a clinical practice and also like an anarchist free clinic called the Black Flag Herbal Clinic. Written a bunch of books, have a podcast as well, and run kind of like collective like group programs for people experiencing state violence, like people experiencing burnout and state repression, like former prisoners, prisoner family members. And yeah, I feel like there's probably lots of other things. Oh yeah, also help with a project that runs a mobile clinic for people on the move and refugees in northern France, like on the French and British border. And yeah, just lots of things, all the herbal medicine things. But yeah, with this like big kind of state violence focus.
So you're prolific in your projects. so many projects. And I want to talk I would love for our listeners to hear more about how these different projects work. So we'll talk about that for sure, too. But it's, you know, it's so interesting. It sounds like you were politicized actually quite young, even before you were incarcerated, and then came to this whole different level of politicization in terms of community organizing, mutual aid support, through your experiences supporting people with state violence. Can you speak a little bit more to that? Where did your politics come from?
I guess like context, like I was brought up by a amazing single mom, but on like income support, like state benefits. So like this kind of like class analysis like came in quite strong, like just through life experience and seeing like patriarchy and abusive men and all the things. But I actually found like a Enrico Malatesta book when I was babysitting when I was 10 years old. I mean, I should not have been babysitting at that age for another kid, but it was for my mom's friend.
In the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
The 90s. Yeah.
And I remember just reading this book, like from cover to cover, like in a few hours and just being like, wow, like this word describes everything for me in terms of like this commitment to eradicating domination, like whether that's, yeah, like how we organize like our economies and our labor, or whether that's, you know, like resisting like racism and fascism, or fighting for animal liberation, or, you know, like eco-defense stuff. Like, I just feel like the word like struck a chord with me. And this was like just as the internet was like starting, right? And we didn't have a computer, but I wrote to the Anarchist Federation like when I was like 11 years old being like, I want to do stuff, like can I get involved? And they sent me a little list of contacts, and I like gave this guy a call and met up with him, and anyway, so the rest is history. But yeah, I was definitely like politicized before prison and had supported people in prison. Like my first partner got sent down when I was like 16 years old. And yeah, like I was inside for like an animal liberation campaign. So like, yeah, there was definitely all those politics there. But I think I hadn't come across like ideas around like prison abolition, which was like quite kind of like North American, I would say, like in terms of like analysis and its roots in people who are like, you know, resisting like slavery. And yeah, it's like quite specific, I would say, to the like context in the so-called US. But it was like interesting to me of like being in this institution and seeing like so much like violence and horror and yeah, poverty, and just kind of like getting out of prison and just like making myself devoted to just like, yeah, I want to become the prison system's biggest fucking enemy. Like, I just want to like, you know, like I don't want anyone else to have to go through that experience. And yeah, prisoner family members and people leaving prison like are experiencing so much marginalization and oppression in all sorts of ways that, you know, like that's, I guess, been what I've been devoted to ever since I got out, is like, how do we respond to harm? Like, how do we respond to like abuse and, you know, like power dynamics and the state and all of these things? But yeah, like how do we also connect with plants? And I feel like it's plants that have sustained all of that kind of other organizing and like interfacing with lots of like horrible stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I so enjoy hearing this out loud. I spent a lot of time with your book yesterday, with your new book.
Yeah.
Your new book, which is Herbalism and State Violence, Practical Herbal Medicine for Surviving State Repression. And it's so fun to get to hear, you know, just in your words, in your voice, some of where you came from after reading words on a page. But I really did get the sense that the offerings that you have in herbalism and organizing are really offerings from your heart for your communities, and that you have a very expansive sense of community. Also a very expansive sense of what justice means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that what you're thinking about race, you're thinking about class, you're thinking about misogyny, you're thinking about, you know, all of these different aspects that impact how state repression works and also form state repression. Well, I'm curious, first of all, can you just tell listeners a little bit about this book and where this book came from and what it contains for you?
Sure. So people probably remember 2020 quite viscerally, but I put a call out for a zine. I never want to start a zine because it always turns into a book, which is my problem. So I put a call out of like, hey, I want to do this like herbalism and state violence zine. And like a bunch of people emailed with like ideas and stuff and things they'd already written. And then obviously the pandemic started, and then it was just like next level mutual aid stuff, organizing, like doing the clinic in France, pretty much like back to back for like what felt like years, like 4 years, I guess, 4 or 5 years. And then I was like, I really want to finish this book. It's been unfinished for too long. So I, yeah, was actually pregnant and had a very awful first 6 months of my pregnancy. But as my like vomiting stopped, I was like, I am determined to finish this book. So with the support of an amazing friend called Kez, who's like a trans feminist, awesome writer and editor, she helped me, and we just like bashed it out in like 2 months. And then I was literally like 8 months pregnant, like packing up these books in my herb shed. Like it was ridiculous. But yeah, like, and I wasn't expecting it to get so like large, like as I know you're going to be giving it away fundraising attempts, but it's like, it is a beast. It's like 440 pages or something. But yeah, I feel like it kind of captures all these different like possibilities for herbalism, like whether that's a focus on border violence, and it shares like a bunch of recipes from the Mobile Herbal Clinic in Calais, or whether it's about state repression and it shares like recipes from my like anti-repression care packages, and, you know, beautiful stories and poems and different things from people who've like also supported people in prison or gone through repression themselves. And yeah, so it's kind of like looking at just like the tip of the iceberg in terms of state violence, and then looking at like practical herbal responses. And the goal is just to like illuminate to the world of like this amazing potential of herbalism, and like how it's just like an amazing tool to support people's, you know, bodies, hearts, spirits, like all the things. And yeah, just to give lots of like examples of that, so hopefully people can kind of, you know, do similar things where they are.
Yeah, I felt it was a very practical book, that it helps orient both to, you know, the theory of what is state violence, what does that look like on the ground, but also what are all of the ways that we can bring plants into supporting people who are experiencing all of the different forms of state violence. But I'm wondering also, could you just, so we're all on the same page, what is state violence? Can you tell us about that?
That's a very big question, and probably the bit of writing that was maybe the most difficult, because yeah, there's so many manifestations of like the state in different ways. And there's like a million and one amazing authors and academics and anarchists and people that have analyzed that over time. But I guess I see it as like the kind of the way that like society is structured to kind of enable domination of like the many by the few. And yeah, the state, like, oh my god, it is such a side rant, I'm not going to go down there, but like, yeah, to kind of like maintain such a hierarchical society, there needs to be like some sort of structure that maintains that, and that is generally like the state in different ways. And those kind of hierarchies of inequality can only be maintained by violence, pretty much. Like, I, you know, maybe there's other options in other places, but really, like, the way that this kind of like origins of social organization have developed over time to kind of like create this like state. Like, I think I quote in the book, like one author describes it as like the operating system of like, it's kind of how our world is like being shaped all the time. And yeah, in terms of like the violence, like some people will experience that as like a very visceral, like intimate thing that they'll experience regularly. Like maybe that's someone in their neighborhood who's abducted by ICE. You know, like I know in the so-called US, there's like, you know, you've got like the biggest prison population in the world, like over 2 million people. So you've got millions of prisoner family members who know that impact of state violence like so well in their bodies, of that trauma of separation and the trauma of visiting and all the abuse and violence that happens in prison walls, like all of these things. And yeah, but there are like all these other manifestations of state violence, which, yeah, you do come up against if you're trying to like change the system and, you know, challenge injustice and things. But also you come up against it if you are a person who is like specifically and intentionally targeted by the state, which is like mostly racialized people, you know, people without papers, like queer and trans communities, you know, organizers and people that are like threats to social power. Like all of these people are going to be like regularly interacting with like different forms of state violence. Does that answer the question? It's such a big question, but
it is a big question. It is a big question. I can reflect back also to our situation in the United States right now, in the so-called United States on Turtle Island, which is part of the reason I wanted to do, you know, this show with you and to offer your book as a thank you gift also, is because of what we're experiencing here in the U.S. right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us, we're calling this series of shows Herbs Against Fascism, and a lot of folks really are experiencing a lot of concerning political repression that mm-hmm. does, you know, not just dip a toe into fascism, but is starting to kind of sprint full speed into fascism. And, you know, some of the ways that we're seeing our community, as you were mentioning, seeing our community impacted by policing, by the police state, and also just by the state regulating people's ability to exist safely, you know, is we're seeing the way that ICE is impacting our communities. I'm on some of the ICE watch threads here in the Bay Area, and we've had some abductions these past weeks. We see, you know, the ways that people who are doing anti-ICE organizing are being targeted, and, you know, some of the deaths that have occurred this past winter of organizers. We're also seeing a lot of repression of those who have been calling for a free Palestine for mm-hmm. several years now, as well as targeting, especially of the trans community, but the LGBTQ community broadly. You know, and that some of these are more administrative forms of violence, but a lot of these are really ways that harm is coming down strongly on people's heads here,
mm-hmm.
Enacted by the police state and by state repression in the United States. So I'm curious, when we're in these times of so much right-wing backlash, so much consolidation of power into the hands of the few, you know, of which state repression is a fantastic tool to do that consolidation of power. Where do you start supporting your communities? What are the actions? What are the plants that are coming to you in these times when things feel bleak? Things feel like they're getting worse and becoming more fascist every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's like such a big question, and I feel like what's overwhelming people somehow is like the scale. Like lots of things that are happening are like actually not new, right? Like they've been, like I talk about it a little bit in the book of like, you know, like I live in the UK, and like I feel like the British state has like perfected the art of statecraft of like, how do we maintain our state with like just enough violence to like keep things going, but not enough to trigger a rebellion, while also exporting violence all over the world through colonialism and those like colonial like initiatives, I guess, being like the testing ground for like state apparatus and like the development of the state. And, you know, like loads of people like write about this, like Dylan Rodriguez, maybe, you know, like a academic who talks about like, yeah, statecraft and white supremacy and all the things. And like, I guess, in a way, because these things aren't new, we can also look to like, what have we been doing to respond to these things? But like, how can they be like amplified and escalated? So like, maybe there's like quite an effective, like, you know, like Ice Watch initiative or something that's like actually protecting people and is like one step ahead of like abductions and things. And then it's like, how on earth do we scale that out so that like every community is like protecting its people, right? And I think it's a bit similar with herbalism, and it's a bit why I created the book, is like to just kind of like amplify things that have happened. So like our mobile herbal clinic in Calais, that is like serving people on, you know, on the border, like there's no reason why that couldn't be something that happens on every border, right? Every border hotspot where people are experiencing displacement and police violence and, you know, like massive organized, like hostile environment, like policies, like there could be hub lists working with like every group there, like doing solidarity work who are, you know, attending to people's wounds and trying to organize to help people get to safety and like all of these things. And like, you know, none of these things are kind of like new in the sense that, you know, people have been like resisting since domination began, right? Like in all different ways. And what can we learn from them? But yeah, in terms of herbalism, I feel like if I can send like a beautiful herbal care package, a beautiful herbal care package to support, say, someone like resisting ICE and can offer that person and their tissues in their body some Nervine support or support with their blood pressure or support with their digestive health, then that person can continue to like effectively resist and organize. And maybe the effects of like intense chronic stress doesn't push them to like the depths of chronic illness quite as fast, right? Because they've had that solidarity from plant medicines. And I think like, yeah, it's kind of a question of scale of like, we do need these sorts of initiatives like all over the world to, you know, to combat like what is happening. And obviously it's beyond just herbalism, right? Like you mentioned, like we need like all of the things, not just the herbs, but if it is like herbalists who are listening, then I do think every community has its own needs. You know, maybe there's like a lot of like houseless people with, you know, challenges around active addiction, and like the biggest thing you can be doing is like harm reduction work. Or maybe, yeah, like you are in the center of a city somewhere and, you know, you are just kind of like trying to monitor like police violence or do court support. Or yeah, and I just feel like the book just brings like a bunch of different examples to life. And I think sometimes herbalists worry about like what is their role, but like the longer I do this, the more I see like how powerful it is of like, whether it's that one-to-one person in the clinic who has struggled with pain for years and years and years, who now is like finding relief for like the first time in 20 years or something, or whether it's that refugee that we get to hospital because someone cares about him and has, you know, like advocated for him to get to hospital. And, you know, maybe he's been given a cough, cold and flu pack to help him, like to help prevent his respiratory infection from escalating. Like it's, you know, there's like a micro level of like how plants are really helping people one-to-one. But I feel like the state is all about like dehumanizing people every step of the way, and herbalism is somehow about humanizing people, if that makes sense. It's about actually you matter, like your health matters, like caring for you matters. Like I care if you get deported, I care if you get put in a cell, I care if you get locked in a cage for 2 years. Like, and that, yeah, is kind of like, yeah, the basis of my organizing really is like, I just really care about people. And one way I can express care is like through herbs, because they're just like the best, as you know.
Herbs are the best. I loved in the conclusion of the book, you called herbs your comrades or your compañeros, you know. Yeah. So often here we have people coming on the air, you know, talking about how herbs are their friends, but I love the framing of herbs as our comrades also, which I think is true, you know, in traditional ways and in the traditional teachings that I've received. It's our job to show up for the plants, for their well-being, which means showing up for the whole world. And it's the plants' jobs also to show up for us. Yeah. So we're comrades, you know, in a bidirectional way to each other. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple other things that, you know, before we, when we spoke getting ready for this interview, you kind of brought up that you feel like there's a mandate for herbalists here. You know that a lot of herbalists can have some hesitation about getting involved politically, but that there are these accessible ways to organize and make it happen. And that's a lot of what I was hearing you speak about just now. You know that as herbalists, we need to have our eyes open to the politics of the world and be understanding what our place is, the ways that we can participate, the ways that we can support. The other thing that I've heard you speak about a couple of times and that I'd love to hear more about is the mobile herbal clinic in Calais. Because I think that's It's got a wonderful story. It's an excellent model for, you know, structures that we might base or draw some inspiration upon to be doing similar but local projects elsewhere around the world. So can you tell us about that mobile clinic?
Sure. So, yeah, so just, I guess, a little context, like Calais is like a town in the north of France, and people are kind of like scattered across that coastline. And because there are no safe or legal routes for people to apply for asylum, apart from like a couple of exceptions, like if you're from Ukraine or Hong Kong, but for everyone else, they have to basically make like an incredibly dangerous like journey across the sea, like mostly in like small dinghies and like quite dangerous boats. Or they have to, yeah, cross via like lorries or get into trucks, things like this. But either way, it's like super dangerous. And many, many people have died. Like I've met entire families who I've given herbal support to 1 week, and then literally they've like drowned, like with their baby, like in the channel. So it's like, yeah, it's very, yeah, it's its own little universe, if that makes sense, of just kind of like horror, which unfortunately is replicated like all over Europe, especially, but I'm sure also borders like the US and Mexico and things. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, so healthcare access is challenging for people living in these like encampments because they're constantly moved on by police. They don't have access to regular, consistent, like clean water. There's like amazing initiatives giving out food and clothing and things. But yeah, life is like super precarious, and even like the most basic of conditions will like escalate very quickly. So Herbalist had been working in the area for a long time, but it wasn't until 2019 that there was this decision to like create like our own organization that can offer like consistent solidarity going like every single month for the first week of the month. And yeah, my old clinical supervisor, Melissa Ronaldson, was like the founder of that. And I just like got involved as a kind of student at the beginning, and ended up becoming the field coordinator and doing all this like logistical work and fundraising work and like, yeah, picking up all the clinical things and getting trained by some amazing people and doctors and things in like herbal first aid. But yeah, for a trip, we will see like, you know, sometimes like 600 people over a week, sometimes more. And most people are struggling with like kind of upper respiratory infections, but also lots of wounds and injuries and sprains. But our main kind of critical role is like screening for people that need like higher definitive care. So we take a lot of people to hospital. We do a lot of advocacy with like, we've got a team which is like a mix of herbalists from the UK and like French doctors. So there's like this really nice mix of like being able to like use the privilege of the French doctor to like get care for people. And we make all of the medicine ourselves, like other than maybe like 10% of it we might buy. But like everything is pretty much grown and made by hand by like, you know, a small group of medicine makers like across the UK. And all of that is like, yeah, just in defiance of this hostile environment that, you know, the British and the state French are cooperating to implement against racialized people. So yeah, so it's been going for a fair while. I spent 4 years bouncing back and forth to France until I had my son. And since then, I've had to just like focus on the UK side of it, like medicine making and fundraising and things. But yeah, I think it's like an interesting project because it's like pretty phenomenal in terms of like how many people we see and seeing how effective the medicines are, seeing how loved and appreciated the medicines are, you know, seeing all the different like wound protocols. And it's been a lot of graft over a lot of years, but I do, like you said, like I think it is like a really amazing example medicine of like a really amazing example of like herbal medicine in practice.
I can see how excited you are about this project too, how much it means to you.
Yeah.
Light up talking about it. Yeah.
I mean, I really miss going because like, I just felt like, yeah, it's so vicariously traumatizing that it's like, you can't, it's not that you want to be there, but it's just like, it just feels surreal when you're not there because there's this like whole other world of like pain and suffering that, yeah, you're not kind of like engaged in like solidarity around. But I think I've learned since I got pregnant just like how vital all the behind the scenes stuff is. And like, this is what I mean with Herbalist. It's like, you don't have to be the one doing the dressings, right? Like somewhere frightening with the cops and all of this stuff. Like you can be the person like growing the medicine and making the medicine and posting it or providing support for people to, you know, offload on you or whatever, like after the trips. And yeah, like there's a whole just possibility of infrastructure of solidarity that Herbalist can plug into. And yeah, that stuff is like super, super, super important.
Yeah. I'm curious, what are a couple of your favorite herbal recipes or formulas or other protocols from the mobile clinic?
Oh, I mean, I am like the cough syrup maker. So like an amazing cough syrup, which is like a mix of a glycerite, which I make in the slow cooker, which contains elderberries, fennel, and cinnamon. And then that is combined with like a marshmallow gloop with some rose water. And yeah, I'll make like thousands and thousands of liters of that basically. And it is just like, it just goes down so well. Like it's super nutritive. It's really soothing. It's really effective. Like we'll see people that were like really considering taking to hospital because they're so unwell. And then within a couple of days, they're just like, you know, kind of bounce back pretty hard. And like we're always getting guys in France come up to us being like, have you got more of this? Like it's a super popular recipe.
There's the recipe for that in your book, right?
Yeah. I've included like nearly all of the clinic's recipes. And then, yeah, I guess in terms of like wound stuff, like we have a very effective wound spray, which is a mix of like calendula and myrrh tincture with some water. And yeah, I for the last few years that I was there, I was like the working on the external medicine station. So doing like all the wounds and the dressings and stuff. And yeah, I don't know how much of that wound spray I've used in my life, but like, it is like, yeah, people will be really struggling with like a secondary bacterial infection that they picked up in like Bulgaria or something. And they've had it for 2 months and nothing shifted it. And then, you know, we'll spray this spray. And within like a couple of days, like the lesions are like so dramatically better and someone isn't in pain anymore and, you know, doesn't have a fever anymore. And it's just like, wow, that sure calendula, work. Eh? Sneaky. So strong.
Absolutely. One other question about the mobile herb clinic, and this is, what are some pro tips you have for people who might be considering starting a similar project where they are?
Oh, interesting. I think even though I love planning, I'm such a big planner, I think that you actually have to build the systems as you go. And like, there's like a level of like research you can do, you know, like gauging people's needs and, you know, like learning from other projects that exist and experimenting with recipes and like building your crew and stuff like this. But like, actually, like the systems we use now, like 7 years later, we couldn't have developed those in that first year, you know, like now we've got systems to track our inventory, to track how many people we're seeing and their different presentations. We've got referral forms, like we've got medicine making infrastructure, like all over the country and also Europe. Like we couldn't have done that on day one. So I think the best thing is to kind of like get started and yeah, like develop those systems as you go. Because, yeah, you're inevitably going to be changing and growing and evolving. And like, I think a lot of herbalists learned that with like pandemic response stuff of like, you had to just like respond to people's needs and those needs change. And now, how are we showing up for people with long COVID, for example? Like, do you know what I mean? So I think, yeah, we maybe feel people can feel frightened of like, I don't know enough, like, blah, 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 blah. But actually, it's like, yeah, you kind of have to learn by doing as much as you need to, you know, be learning your herbalism and your clinical safety and all of this stuff. And I'm working on this big like frontline herbalism membership where I'm just going to like put loads of these skills and resources and tools and templates and stuff that we've developed like into something accessible for people so that it is easier to create projects without, you know, doing all the work that we've had to do. But at the same time, like every project, every context is different. And if we want people to, you know, also have like an ecological practice, then the herbs that we use are, you know, I live in this amazing place where the hedgerows are filled with like elder and hawthorn and rose, like just coming out of my ears, whereas someone else might be living in like a desert or have like different access to plants. So yeah, everything has to be kind of like adapted and unique to like your context. Yeah, does that make sense?
That does make sense. Yeah. But I appreciate that, you know, that there's ways we can learn from path projects, and also we need to be responsive to the environment and the new circumstances around us all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
We also see, you know, with some frequency, as I get anyways, and I think other herbalists see out there, calls for donations for herbs when there's different kind of political organizing moments, or, you know, there's been an emergency, or, you know, whatever it is. And I'm wondering if you have recommendations for how people can thoughtfully donate herbs, right? So what, in these moments when there's a call for, you know, something happened, please send us medicine. How can people do that in a good way?
Good question. Yeah, this stuff is tricky. So I helped start this project called Ukraine Herbal Solidarity when the like genocidal reinvasion started. And yeah, like the Ukrainian herbalists involved, like put a call out for herbs. And I think we learned a lot from that call out of like, you can say, oh, we need elderflower, you know, to make cough syrup or whatever, but like someone can send you like 10 grams of elderflower and someone else can send you like 10 kilos. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's like a little bit of onus on the person putting the call out to be as specific as possible about what is valuable, to make life easier for people donating. But I think, yeah, there's lots of challenges. Like we've definitely found it in Calais. Like how do you, you know, like have kind of quality control, do you know what I mean? Of like things, I hate to say it, but things being like good enough to distribute, like that's really important for us. And that's why we've actually got, I don't want to say like centralized, but we've got like a handful of medicine makers who take responsibility for quality. And so, for example, I'll make the cough syrup, but I have a whole bunch of people that come over and help me bottle it and strain it and do all this stuff. And I think, yeah, people need to take things like plant identification seriously and kind of good manufacturing practices, not in the sense of like complying with the state, but just in the sense of like, do you know where things have come from? Do you know where they're going? Have you tracked your medicine making? And this is stuff that I'm going to include in the membership. But at the same time, like, I don't want to disenfranchise people that maybe don't have all of that stuff in place, because yeah, just like every project is different. And like with this Black Flag Herbal Clinic, like it is valuable for us to be donated maybe just 1 liter of tincture. Do you know what I mean? From a herbalist, that's going to help a bunch of people. Whereas with Ukraine, like we distributed like 17,000 medicines within 6 months. So it's like we needed like tens of hundreds of bottles of tinctures. So that's what I mean by like scale. It gets challenging. But yeah, I think just like follow the instructions of the person who's like requested it or the people. And yeah, like label everything really well. It sounds basic, but the barrier to me, like distributing a cream or something.
Just a bottle of tincture that just says mullein, you know?
So label it, date it, name the grower, name the, you know, where you've sourced it. All that stuff's like super valuable.
So I think I might have us switch topics. You know, one of your areas of expertise really is providing herbs to people who are incarcerated, people who are in prison, which I've never done, and which is something that from my perspective would be so challenging. Now that I've read the book that you just put out, I really want to read your previous book also, The Prisoner's Herbal, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about how you make plant medicine, how you get plant medicine to people who are incarcerated, how you help people who are imprisoned actually be able to connect with the plants?
So sadly, like, it's also impossible for me to, like, make medicine to send in. Which is why I basically wrote The Prisoner's Herbal, because I'll send you a copy, but it's basically 10 super common plants that I worked with when I was in prison, as well as like how to like work with things that you can find on the canteen, which is like, I think it's called commissary in the US. So things like salt and pepper or hot chili sauce, stuff like this. Because I had so many friends and comrades inside with health issues, and it just frustrated me that I couldn't support them. So it had to be stuff that they could find and they could forage. And then, yeah, I try as a herbalist to support people that are leaving prison, so like people can reach out and access care when they get out. But yeah, unfortunately, I also, just because of like strict controls and things, like can't get things in. Just imagine how busy I would be if I could. But yeah, but this prisoner's herbal is like a resource for prisoners to, you know, and I'm really aware that like every prison system is different in terms of context of access to plants. Like some prisons have actually quite extensive gardens and like agricultural setup. And other prisons, like, you know, like my friend Kevan is like in solitary confinement, and like he's probably like not seen a plant like in his, like, they call it a close supervision center, like a prison within a prison. You know, he's probably not seen a plant for like 10 years. Do you know what I mean? So every prisoner, not that he cares, he wrote like a joke review of my book where he was like, prisoners are having a hard enough time and now they have to learn about like herbal stuff, just to like, you know, take the mickey out of me. But I lost it, unfortunately. I didn't publish it. It would have been funny. But yeah, so like every prisoner is different, but the book shares like other examples of like, can you, you know, read about herbs in books? Can you draw them? Like when I was in prison, I slept with like a dandelion root under my pillow. And like, that was like just the nicest way to like connect with the strength of that herb. Because, you know, I couldn't exactly make loads of like lotions and potions the way I do now. But if you want to ask me about 50 uses of a chamomile tea bag, I'm your girl. So yeah, I think, yeah, that's basically what that book's tried to achieve, is like, how do prisoners, you know, cultivate even like the tiniest bit of autonomy over their health in a system that is like opposing that, you know, like even just to get toilet roll or like a paracetamol is like an absolute nightmare. So it's like, how can you, you know, like, yeah, develop a little bit more autonomy, like over your health. Yeah.
What are some of the herbs in that book? You know, I think I remember you saying, writing in the current book, that, you know, you could joke that the prisoner's herbal was, you know, 100 ways to use dandelion.
Yeah, it was all the babes, like dandelion, nettle, chamomile, but like different types of chamomile, like pineapple weed and things that you can find. Where I was, there was actually like quite a large like rose garden, like in the kind of front section of the prison, like conveniently where the visitors visit. So I included rose in the book, chickweed, plantain, yarrow, and mallow. So like there was like a lot of mallow growing like in the gravel and stuff where I was. So that was like my first introduction to like common mallow. I didn't meet marshmallow until I got out, and now I'm obsessed with marshmallow. I have a marshmallow root tattoo after making all this cough syrup with marshmallow root. But yeah, and then the like canteen commissary section, it's like loads of different like spices and condiments, like salt and pepper, and also like fruits and vegetables. You know, like you can get certain like fruits in prison, or at least I could. You could get like oranges and bananas, for example. So I included as much information I could about like some of like the creative medicinal ways you can work with them.
You have like, can you share a story or two about an unusual way, like a way that you would never use one of those medicines outside of prison?
Oh, what you mean, the plants or the like the fruits and the salt and stuff?
Anything. What's a way that you would draw on those, you know, inside that you wouldn't necessarily think to recommend to somebody outside?
Oh, good question. I mean, like, I guess like the nice thing about the book is like a lot of the stuff is helpful for people on the outside. So like a chamomile tea bag, for example, like you could, yeah, have some kind of like, you know, like that prison environment is like a nightmare if you have like a slightly atopic, like allergic tendency, like I did. Like I ended up having like anaphylaxis inside, which wasn't very fun because I was like locked in. And anyway, but like I would get like hives and stuff. And I think it was, you know, just this horrific industrial diet, but also like all the cleaning products and like the Roundup and, you know, like everything they're using. So, you know, I would often make like as much chamomile tea as I could, like in my flask and my little collection of hidden mugs that I had like stolen from various places. And then I would soak like a pillowcase in it. And then like apply that to my arms because it wasn't possible to like buy creams and stuff that I needed. So, but I could like put that kind of chamomile infusion like on my body. And that would be like super soothing and help like heal up those hives. And yeah, my baby had, I shouldn't laugh because it's horrible, but he had like hand, foot and mouth recently from nursery, okay, like last year. And it was horrific. Like he couldn't, you know, like he was in a lot of pain and he couldn't sleep. And for the first time since being in prison, I soaked a bunch of like the Muslim cloths in chamomile tea, which was cool, obviously, and just laid it over his body and like the, you know, the like strong rashes you get. And it was the thing that helped him sleep. So it was just like a nice like turn of events of I'm just nourishing this little beautiful human with this same herb that had my back like nearly 20 years ago. No, I mean, 15 years ago. I can't remember. A long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. It comes around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is also making me think of that there's a whole section in your book discussing, well, a couple of sections in different ways, but discussing support for family members and loved ones of those who are incarcerated or who have been separated from their families in other ways, you know, that the other ways that state violence works. I've really been thinking about this these days, you know, of families who are awaiting news of their family members who have been abducted by ICE or, you know, who know their family members are in a detention center and that there's very limited ability to be in contact, much less to control, you know, this horrific system that is disappearing people and often putting their lives in harm's way. What do you call on for those family members? What do you recommend? Let's talk about herbs. Like, what herbs will you point people towards?
So like, yeah, I guess for context of, you know, like I said, my first boyfriend went to prison when I was 16 and I've been involved in like all sorts of prisoner solidarity organizing and had close friends that I met in prison that I continued to support for a really long time, including friends who've died inside. And like, the overwhelming feeling on a daily basis for myself and for the like thousands of people I've met in and out of the prison system is just like grief. Like, as much as like the prison system kind of, you know, destroys your physical health in terms of your, you know, stress hormones and like the, you know, like all the chronic illness cascade that chronic stress generates in the body, like the thing that I see all the time is just this like heartache and emotional pain. And like, I know everyone has different herbs for that, but like for me, without a doubt, it just always comes back to like rose. And also hawthorn is like amazing for grief. And, you know, these are two plants that are like super abundant where I am. So it's like very easy to make a lot of medicine with them. But yeah, like I feel like prisoner families, like I have a prisoner family care package that people can request, which has like a nerve nourisher tea with like skullcap and oat straw and rose and chamomile. And I have like a rose petal soother. And then there's some other like immune support and like a blend for people doing prison visits. It's like that kind of like immune kind of tonic action while they're like, you know, traveling a lot or driving far or, you know, like subjected to all the public transport viruses and all the things. But yeah, but the feedback I get all the time is like about this rose petal glycerite and like just how much it like hits for people of, you know, because like the grief around supporting someone in prison is like very invisibilized because, like you said, people are being disappeared, like, and it is like, you know, completely intended state tactic to remove people from our communities, but like that leaves like a gap, right? Like maybe that's your partner who you cuddled up with at night, like maybe that's your child who you looked after for years after years, you know, like maybe that's a parent, like maybe that's like a comrade that you've worked with closely for a decade. Like it could be anyone you have a strong relationship with. And when that like relationship is like ruptured, like you already spoke to like the powerlessness, but like, you know, like one of the definitions of trauma is like literally like an experience that's like so overwhelming you can't really integrate it. And I feel like grief in terms of losing people we love, like to the finality of death, is very overwhelming, but you're kind of powerless if someone dies anyway, right? You can't do anything. Whereas when someone is like away, quote unquote, in a prison, like you feel just as powerless because you're coming up against the violence of the state, but like that person is still alive, right? So it's like, it just creates like such an intense feeling of like heartache. And yeah, for me, like Rose is really fantastic at helping people like release that kind of emotional pain, helping them feel like they aren't alone, like being reminded of like the joy and the beauty of the world. Because I think when someone is like in that kind of prison land, like it's very easy to like fall into a place where like all you witness is like suffering on a daily basis. And you forget like how amazing it is to be alive and like how amazing plants are. And I feel like Rose is just this like beautiful gift of like reminding you to like, yeah, like keep your heart open a bit, if that makes sense. And that it's like the worst feeling in the world to know that someone you love is in danger. But like, it's also the nicest feeling in the world and the most life-changing experience to know what it feels like to love someone. And that doesn't have to just be like romantic relationship, right? And I feel like this prison context, for me, it like taught me what love really means, if that makes sense. And I think like I see that grief as like a gift of like, I'm alive and I'm feeling something for someone, and the state, no matter how much they've tried, haven't killed that love in me for this other human, you know? Yeah, but I think, yeah, I mean, like I could just go to Rose like every day of the week for everything. But yeah, I feel like in my care packages, like Rose is like really the hub that most people feel that like strengthening with, if that makes sense.
That rose glycerite sounds beautiful. Yeah.
It's dreamy. It's dreamy.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. I've had like rose honeys, but I'm asking myself if I've ever had a rose glycerite, but I can just imagine what that would taste like. And what a beautiful, for me, the taste of rose, it really does, it gets into my chest. It fills me up. It's a special plant. It really is a special plant. Yeah. That like really carries heart energy with it. It's beautiful. You know, as we're thinking about families of those who are incarcerated, disappeared by ICE, all of these things, I'm also just thinking about our greater communities who are experiencing a lot of stress and distress right now, right? In so many different ways. I think, you know, we're living in a time when there is the ripples of oppression are reaching lots and lots and lots of people. You know, whether that's regarding ICE, whether that is the transphobia that's happening on the big levels, whether it's the impacts of, you know, people's families being affected by war and genocide that is, you know, happening actively in this time, or whether it's just, you know, all of the ways that people are being really put through distressing situations. Like we're in a bad economy where, you know, it's things are kind of rough out here. Mm-hmm. On top of that, we have a lot of people who are really dedicating a lot of their energy to resisting state repression, to resisting fascism. What does all of this do to the nervous system? And what are some of the herbs, you know, everybody out here should be drawing upon in these times?
Oh, big question. Like, I guess, again, for context, like, I have like a body of work, like in an online course, which no one is turned away from for lack of funds, which is all about herbalism, PTSD and traumatic stress. So that goes into it in much more detail around, yeah, how chronic stress affects the body and the nervous system and how we need collective responses to that, not just like individualized responses. But yeah, like I also, after like 2 decades of like organizing really, really hard, like against like prison expansion and doing all this prisoner support stuff and loads of caring responsibilities within my family and everything. Like I hit like a really serious burnout. And that was actually my first sort of writing context of writing this Overcoming Burnout book, which was like a series of blogs, like documenting that kind of experience. But yeah, I interact with a lot of people struggling with burnout like very regularly in my sort of clinical practice and my solidarity work. And I guess like it sounds so simple, but like really prevention is better than cure. Like really take this seriously. Like, you know, like even a soldier who is like, you know, probably doing something horrifying in terms of colonial violence, like even soldiers have time off, right? They rotate. They're in the front for however long and then they are meant to step back and recover. And I feel like organizers and people engaged in resistance work, you know, we all know it's like lifetimes of fighting, right? And struggle and generations of people organizing, but it's like, it is like dangerous, I guess, to be in this like fight or flight, like sympathetic dominant state for really long periods of time, because like the body is kind of like just like the land and the ecosystems we're trying to defend, like isn't an unlimited resource, right? Like it is, you know, you will start to trigger effects, whether that's, you know, sleep disturbances or, you know, disruptions in the integrity of your gut lining because of the volume of stress hormones in your blood, or whether it's, you know, like flashbacks and nightmares and things like this. So like, I think that people engaged in this work, like they kind of need to treat their bodies like athletes, in the sense of like, we need like as much good quality sleep as we can. We need good nutrition. Like we need nervous system support so that our body is not, you know, just like rinsing its cortisol reserves like every single day of the week. Like we need, you know, like help for issues before they, you know, escalate. And I think, yeah, we also just need this like cultural change around what we demand of each other, you know. Like I'm all for like encouraging and inspiring action, but like I'm also very serious about like burnout and compulsive workaholism and just sort of like exploitation and martyrdom of people in terms of like, you know, like I wrote a blog called like Herbalism as like a Rebellion Against Self-Neglect, where I really spoke to like my own experiences, but I've seen this like echoed in movements loads in my life. But like I didn't know who I was without organizing, like, and I didn't, all of my like identity and self-worth was like wrapped up in like output and like, what am I achieving as an organizer and like all of this stuff. And actually it was like the plants that taught me how to rest, you know, how to observe, how are my mucous membranes feeling in my throat? You know, like, how am I sleeping? Like, am I getting a cold? Like, you know, like I feel like it was plants that taught me how to rest, you know, skullcap tea that made me realize what like a parasympathetic state felt like, of like, oh, this is what rest and digest feels like before I sleep. You know, this is how I don't have another nightmare for the same night in like 10 years, is I finally found a herb that can help shift that pattern. And so I think more than ever, we need to work with like nervine herbs that have an affinity for the nervous system, so that even if it's just pockets of time in the day, like there's some respite, you know, like there's a chance to just kind of rest and digest. And I don't mean like scrolling, doom scrolling on your phone and just exposing yourself to even more horror in the world. I mean like genuinely, you know, being as kind of like feeling in like a safe and social state as possible. And like I said, you know, like tending to the basics, like it always comes back to the basics, like of nutrition and sleep. And yeah, and I think that's, yeah, I think having a kind of approach that like we're really in it for the long haul, you know. And I know it sounds terrifying, but we really are at like the tip of the iceberg in terms of this stuff. And like, you know, like trying to have that long-term approach, I feel like does gently shift something in the body where it's like, it really is a marathon and not a sprint. Sorry, that was a big rant, but does it make sense?
No, I think that's wonderful. And As you're speaking to all of this, I'm also thinking about a part of the book where you categorize nervines in different ways and how they can be differently helpful in supporting us, you know, again, in all of this stress and distress and resilience and burnout prevention or burnout response. And it was very interesting to me. I hadn't seen this kind of categorization of nervines before. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about some of these nervine categories and maybe an example of a nervine in each of them and why you pull on that herb.
Sure, with pleasure. I did recently record a podcast series where I went into each category in much more detail. So folks can listen to that for the detail. But so I talk about like relaxant nervines and I critique the word relax because I don't want people to think, oh, I'm just putting my feet up. It's actually more about how do you feel like safer in your body and able to, you know, think more clearly and feel a bit calmer. And so, yeah, some of those herbs can help us access that state, but without like too much sedation. So the ones I really commonly work with are like chamomile and lemon balm, like hawthorn. Just kind of like herbs that you can, I mean, everyone is different. I don't want to give like generic advice. Like obviously, you know, people need to check out like medication interactions and if things are safe in pregnancy and things. But yeah, like I feel like there are my kind of like bread and butter herbs that are like my go-to nervous system support. And then, yeah, I talk about cardiac nervines, which are herbs with an affinity for the heart and the cardiovascular system. So we've already spoken about rose, like hawthorn is just amazing for supporting like the whole cardiovascular system and also that kind of like emotional stuff around like pain and grief and has like a real affinity with, you know, blood pressure and it's very cooling. I'm a very hot person in terms of like a lot of energy, a lot of like heat and in a kind of excited state. So I need lots of like cooling herbs, whereas other people need to be like warmed up a little bit. But I find these cardiac nervines are often in like the rose family and have this kind of like cooling, relaxant kind of antispasmodic effect. And then I talk about like sedative or like hypnotic nervines, which can induce much stronger states of sleep and like stronger states of relaxation. But yeah, there's lots of disclaimers around that state isn't always like, doesn't always feel like default safe for someone. Like anyway, I talk about that loads in my podcast, but there I'm really working with herbs like skullcap or, you know, stronger herbs like wild lettuce or, you know, even like valerian, for example, which is actually quite stimulating for lots of people, but for other people can have a really like renowned sedative effect. And then I talk about like nerve tonics, which are just like so valuable in our Materia Medica in terms of helping like restore the kind of structure and the functioning of the nervous system. And they have like a whole spectrum of properties and values that aren't like specific, but I guess some people would label them like adaptogens. But I feel like there's like much more nuance there than that. But yeah, like for example, skullcap can help with like the repair of the myelin sheath, which is like the layer of fat around nerve cells. And when that, you know, the nervous system needs fat to function. So when we can kind of like have more healthy fats in our diet and apply things like lavender oil, for example, which I make with olive oil from Palestine, like it's so dreamy for the nervous system and can just help people sleep like so well. Yeah. So anyway, so working with nerve tonics, maybe it's a stronger herb like Schizandra, for example, that can help, you know, kind of modulate the immune system responses and things. Or yeah, like herbs like milky oats would be a perfect example. It's like super nourishing to the nervous system. Yeah. And then finally, there's like stimulating nervines, which are herbs that have a more like stimulating effect, but not in a term, not like think something like coffee or matcha or something like that, but more like gentle stimulation. Like they're often circulatory stimulants and getting blood flow to the brain, for example. They often have like a broad spectrum antimicrobial action on the gut, which I think is like super interesting because I'm like obsessed with microbiology and how like gut health affects like general health. And, you know, like someone's gut health might be a big part of why they might feel like a low mood or depression, for example. So these herbs can kind of help someone move out of a frozen or shut down state. So that's like our kind of, more warming herbs like rosemary and thyme, for example. I don't know if that's enough of a little overview of how I organize Nervines in my head.
I appreciate it. I have a question that may be related or may not be related, which is, in general, you know, as you are working with people in many different settings, you know, in more solidarity focused settings and in your own practice and across sending care packages, showing up for these different projects, mobile projects or other solidarity projects, what herb are you calling upon most to support people these days?
Oh, do you know what? I really think it's hawthorn. And I think that is because it grows where I am. But like, I think because of its like cardiac affinity, like I don't know anyone who's not been affected by COVID, for example. And I feel like lots of people have that kind of like cardiac response to COVID in terms of like inflammation of the heart, or they're having like, you know, like challenging like brain fog or kind of like POTS like symptoms, like orthostatic intolerance, where they're like struggling to stand up and things. And I feel like hawthorn has just this like broad spectrum affinity with like all of the cardiovasculature, like I mentioned. And also it makes an amazing glycerite, so I can make it quite quickly within like 48 hours. I can make an absolutely amazing hawthorn berry glycerite in my slow cookers, which is like another podcast episode in terms of like this method I've developed over years of working with glycerin. I feel like hawthorn is very big in my practice. And also like I ran this hawthorn group program last year, which was like for people experiencing state repression. And we had group calls where we'd meet every 2 weeks and just sort of offer like emotional support to each other and talk about certain things like how repression had affected us. And also we did like hawthorn samples and things. And then people had like one-to-one, like more detailed personalized support from me. And it was just like one of the most beautiful offerings like I've ever organized, and it was just such an honor. And yeah, I feel like that cemented my love of hawthorn like even more, as like a herb that is really holding it down in terms of like community self-defense.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun to do a deep dive like that with hawthorn in community. That sounds really, really beautiful. I love hawthorn medicine so much, and is really one that I draw upon for both my physical heart and the physical hearts of my patients and clients, but also my emotional heart. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, really beautiful medicine. Yeah. And I hadn't really thought about it with that COVID perspective quite the way that you had framed it. So I appreciate that also. And yeah, the ways that people post-COVID also can tend towards some kind of like vascular issues and clots and other things like that too. I think hawthorn could be really supportive in that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, over here in California, even though spring has kind of technically just started relatively recently, with the way that the weather goes here, we're already starting to pretend like it's summer. And we're recording this before May Day, but May Day is coming up in just a few days here. And I really hope, you know, that there's going to be a lot of turnout for May Day events here on the West Coast. But also, I'm anticipating that this summer may be a summer where there's a lot of kind of street resistance and, you know, showing up in beautiful, powerful ways en masse there. I would love to hear from you. Let's say, you know, we've got listeners going to a protest, and we don't know if this protest is going to be, you know, a nice march down the street, or if there might be some police action at the protest, or if there's going to be counter protesters. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. If our listeners are going to a protest and they have time to pick up two or three little herbal products or herbs to take with them, what would you say they should throw in their bag?
Oh, good question. So I remember street medicing at this G20 mobilization, and we were all like, everyone was ready for like tear gas. We had like a whole van of like water bottles and all the like wound care stuff. Nothing kicked off, but like people were getting like sunburnt like left, right and center. So now I'm like, just take sun lotion in your kit, like, because showing up for community health is not just about like pepper spray, right? It's also like, who here is like struggling with dehydration? Like, who's, you know, like really anxious around the police and like needs a bit of support? But yeah, in terms of that acute care, I mentioned the wound spray that we use in Calais. I love like rose water. So like one of my most like visceral memories from France was a 3-year-old girl coming up to the clinic, and she'd been pepper sprayed directly in her face by the police who were trying to get her and her family and the other people off of this dinghy. And, you know, she'd been like screaming for like hours, like in pain. And, you know, they tried to wash out her eyes, and we obviously irrigated them with water and things. And then I gave her some rose water spray to take away, and we give these little cotton pads, and then she cleaned her eyes with rose water, and it was like for the first time she just like came back to life as like a little kid. And I'm sad because I have a 2-year-old. He's nearly 2. He will be 2 on May Day. So I actually gave birth on May Day, which everyone thinks is hilarious, after a 75-hour labor. It's like he was just pushing for May Day, you know. But yeah, like that rose water is so cooling and wonderful for like an aftercare response. Like, you know, have a bottle of water, be prepped with all the things. But in terms of like aftercare, I think rose water is like fantastic for like inflamed eyes, a little bit of cheeky nervous system support for, you know, like if you are doing like police station support, things like that. You know, like it could be a bottle of rose glycerite or hawthorn or whichever like nervine herb you feel affinity with. And then, unfortunately, I cannot go on any mobilization without bruise ointment. So we make a really great one, and the recipes in the Herbalism and State Violence book, but it contains like St. John's wort, comfrey, and arnica, or sometimes daisy oil instead of arnica if we can harvest enough, as well as like essential oils with lavender and wintergreen in like soy wax. And like, it's just so effective for like sprains and strains and bruises, and yeah, just like even just muscle pain from walking around all day, you know, and like standing up all day. Like, that's really tough on people's bodies. So yeah, but if you want something a little bit less clinical, something like a lavender oil is really wonderful, like for sunburn and for like sore and aching muscles. Also, if people are doing a lot of shouting, then, you know, like things that are soothing, like marshmallow and stuff for the throat. Sorry, I know you said 3 things, but I've gone off on one. But yeah, don't forget your sun lotion.
It's hard to narrow it down. I get it. When I go out there, I go to my cabinet real quick and I'm like, okay, let me just grab a couple things. And I end up grabbing like 10 things at least. Right? Yeah. even if I'm not, you know, participating in any formal way, that I still just want to be in the community and bring some things to help people. In this time also, you know, folks are moving with so many different emotions. We've talked about the impacts on the nervous system. We've talked about grief. I'm curious about the anger and the rage out there, you know, which is a productive emotion in a lot of ways, but it's one of those emotions that can kind of, you know, feed positive action, or sometimes can go kind of over the top and become harmful or mobilizing or something else. So what are some of the herbs that you point people towards for anger, for rage?
Ooh, I mean, I had a therapist who was an amazing comrade who supported me for years, and she was like, you just need to become a blowtorch. Like, the problem isn't the fire. The problem is, how is that fire controlled and directed? And I've never forgotten that. And I probably should get some sort of blowtorch tattoo. But I think for me, it's like, yeah, navigating that pain and rage and using it like as strategically as possible without, you know, like pathologizing people's rage and things, which is like completely legit and needs to be expressed. But yeah, like, I think the kind of ongoing consequences of being like in a highly activated state with a lot of like fight energy is it ultimately does lead to sort of dryness and depletion. And so, yeah, I think like accompanying that with like cooling and soothing herbs, like I mentioned, like marshmallow or lemon balm or rose or hawthorn, like they all have this kind of cooling effect, not in a way of like, you know, like quelling your rage, but in a way of like, you know, maintaining your rage for much longer, if that makes sense. So, you know, being able to support your nervous system to keep going, to keep organizing, like we already mentioned. But yeah, so that fire can stay going outward and not destroy us on the inside, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, good plant allies. Well, time flies, and I think we're at the end of our time together. I want you to share some about how people can connect with you, learn from you, get involved in your projects. Can you share a little bit about where folks connect with you?
Sure. So yeah, my website is solidarityapothecary.org. And from there, you can find links to all the other things, the Frontline Herbalism podcast, the old Instagram at solidarity.apothecary, the Mobile Herbal Clinic Calais, and the Black Flag Herbal Clinic, this anarchist-free clinic. If people would like value some kind of free herbal support from me and the crew, then, you know, we support people from all over the world. So don't hesitate to reach out. And likewise, the herbal care packages get posted in all directions all over the world. So if you would value one of them for you or your comrades, then please like request one. And yeah, like the book is already published and available on my website, but PM Press are like reissuing it, and they will do probably a much better job at distributing it and promoting it. But I think their timeline is they're planning to launch it this winter. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Well, thank you so much for all this beautiful work you're doing. Thank you for being here with us. It was really, really good of you to do this. And I think that a lot of people will derive a lot of strength and good information from this interview. So thank you.
Oh, pleasure. Pleasure. Okay. Thanks so much again. Thanks so much for listening to the Frontline Herbalism podcast. You can find the transcript, the links, all the resources from the show at solidarityapothecary.org/podcast.